First, I'd like to thank everybody for their testimony today. I know some of you have traveled quite a ways and probably at no small expense to get here, and we certainly appreciate your time. I'd also like to refresh everybody's memory that our formal comment period ended on February 9th, but we do want to have the opportunity to respond to some of the comments that were given today. So with that, I'd like to take a 20-minute recess, let staff spend a few minutes and gather their notes, and we'll come back and have a staff discussion. So we'll shoot for, well, it's a couple minutes to 3 right now. Let's say 3:20. Okay, thank you. Scouts out looking for counsel too.
We do have scouts out looking for counsel.
Good, very good.
You're just too funny. How's your lovely wife? You good?
She mostly ignores me.
You know, able to
yeah, I think it's just probably more like a typographical.
All right. We are back. So CAT staff have returned.
They have.
And
we're back.
Could you give maybe a quick intro or rundown of where we're going with that?
Well, I just wanted to start by saying this has been a really long process. We've talked to a lot of people, and we're very grateful for the input we've received from both board members as well as the public and various governmental agencies that we have worked with. It's been an open process to the because it's quasi-legislative, we've tried to be as open and transparent as we can because that's the way we like to do business. Staff is going to address the really big issues that we heard that we feel we need to respond to, but I'm quite sure that you all probably have some individual questions that you have written during the discussion today, and so would encourage you to be asking those questions to clarify any remaining concerns that you might have so we have the best document we possibly can.
So I would just like to provide staff's recommendations on the written comments that you received after the deadline. Staff has actually had a chance to read those, not as in-depth as we'd like if we had gotten it on time, but we have read them. Staff does not recommend that you accept the written documents at this time. However, we do have responses to some of the issues raised, and several of them also were already raised and addressed in the staff report. So that is staff's recommendation this time. Felice's pictures, I don't think he was trying to enter those. So.
And for the record, I returned them to him.
Okay. Yeah, I wasn't trying to enter them.
Okay, thank you. So who's going to lead off here?
I believe it's my turn.
Mr. Leland.
David Leland, your staff. I'm going to speak to comments that were raised both by PacifiCorps and also by others on a couple of issues. First, with respect to the achievability issue, a clarification here, we wanted to point out and reiterate that the boundary conditions at Linked River Dam, which are have been a point of discussion, are based on the Upper Klamath Lake TMDL, which is a TMDL developed by Oregon, approved by Oregon, and approved by US EPA. Staff believes that the load allocations are achievable. We acknowledge that those allocations are going to take time to achieve, that it's going to be hard, but that's not a reason not to get started on that. I also wanted to point out that the allocations to PacifiCorps are only for PacifiCorps' contributions to water quality impairments as a result of the presence of their facilities. With respect to CEQA, There were several comments that raised CEQA issues. One, we wanted to note that we analyzed all the alternative means of compliance that were available to us, including those provided to us by PacifiCorps and in response to requests from PacifiCorps. There were also other comments on the impacts of dam removal, and we point out, as we did earlier, that the action plan contains a juncture point where site-specific environmental assessment information will come back to you for consideration as TMDL as to whether or not it's TMDL compliant at a future date. So will be another opportunity, and this, again, is information that would come out of the secretarial determination process with respect to environmental assessment. You'll have another opportunity to make a specific finding as to whether that's TMDL compliant or not.
Mr. Chair, can I ask a question to that? Is that because the decision really has not been made on what to do with these dams, and that in essence we would be speculative?
That's what the secretarial determination process is looking at.
Okay, that seems reasonable. Thank you.
Any other questions?
This is Ben Zabinski of your staff. I'm going to be addressing the suction dredging and the thermal refugia protection policy comments. I want to clarify that what we are proposing is lifting the existing basin plan prohibition on suction dredging discharges outside of the refugia buffers in the policy, and that is to accommodate a future MPDS permit. And we are not excluding suction dredging from MPDS permitting. I think that was a misunderstanding that people had earlier. Also wanted to clarify that we are not regulating mining activities. We are proposing regulation of discharges of waste associated with dredging. And discharges of waste are a privilege and not a right, and have been identified as a pollutant by the Ninth Circuit Court and are subject to MPDS permitting as determined by that court. The reason we're proposing this policy is because of the documented short-term impacts to the channel and to aquatic resources and the likelihood of harm to thermal refugia. This is needed to protect beneficial uses, and we began this policy in previous drafts with a year-round prohibition. We narrowed it down to certain times of the year. We also put in a process to adapt the buffers and also the refugia locations as more information became available.
I had a question for you.
Question, yeah.
One of the questions that we had today was with respect to some of the graphics that you had shown and some of your examples when you'd shown the thermal refugia buffer and the mining claim. So
right.
You had shown along the river corridor sort of a jagged outline of the mining claim and then the thermal refugia buffer that was inside that.
Right.
And I think your point with that graphic was to show that the thermal refugia buffer only represented a small portion of that overall mining claim.
Right.
From what we had heard in some of our oral testimony was that that mining claim actually represented multiple individual
right.
claims inside
right.
there. So can you maybe, was that the case? And so,
I didn't know that at the time.
Okay, so that.
But I guess that is the case.
Okay.
And I took that graphic from the new 49ers website.
Sure.
And as it appeared to me, it was a contiguous claim. And I think that it is all owned by the 49ers, but it is split up.
Mm-hmm.
Into different pieces.
Okay, so and that
can be split up.
Okay, so that still doesn't change the proposed policy. The thermal refugia buffer is going to occur whether if it's inside the claim or not. So the prescribed distance upstream and downstream of that tributary would remain the same regardless. It's just more the issue of the impact to an individual claim, whether it's a very small percentage of an individual claim or if it could actually in fact affect an entire individual claim.
Yeah, and I think that, the fact that they're split up into smaller pieces makes that potentially more likely, that it would encompass an entire
sure.
claim.
No, that's fine. It was just to clarify that from the graphic.
It's definitely true.
Okay.
But I also want to, you know, just stress again that that there is a process to adapt the buffers and to work with that on specific locations. So.
Good. No, I think that's a good point to bring out. So.
Believe it or not, it's the first time I've used that today. Excuse me. Ben, you mentioned, I believe, just a minute ago that the Ninth Circuit has established that mining does have waste associated with dredging. Is that correct?
It's defined as a pollutant under the Clean Water Act and therefore subject to MPDS permitting, according to that court.
Okay.
That's what I know.
Okay. Yes. But we do have a decision from the Ninth Circuit.
Yes.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Norton.
Hey, Ben, can I ask you, too, you indicated that the thermal refugia, there's an update that has been at least talked about. Have you got specifics about that updating of the way I believe it's written now in the TMDL? Is it subject to, I think, updating either through our executive officer, maybe? I may be wrong about that, but do you know or can you speak to how that process should work? How often does it happen, and under what criteria would our, you know, identifying these thermal refugia areas to change that or to amend maybe the management of those? Has that been really clarified or thought about?
I mean, it has to a degree. There is language in the basin plan that speaks to that and describes the process. I can read some of those points. It says the persons proposing modification should submit supporting evidence to the executive officer. The executive officer may add or remove the thermal refugia locations and or buffer link designations after public notice and opportunity for public comment. And we are going to put up the maps showing the buffers and the locations on our website.
And because this ties into the TMDL with impairment, you know, from the standpoint getting to that 303D list, is the 303D process a maybe something to do that by? And I'm just kind of looking for how often, because what I can't envision that any time that somebody would want to provide evidence of a thermal refugia change that you want to go and notice that and have changes, right? So that there's...
I think there would have to be sufficient evidence to warrant that as a possibility. Is that, you know, it wouldn't just... there would have to be some proof of it. It wouldn't just be if someone suggested that we would have
right.
a public... Right.
Right, but you wouldn't want to have to... I guess my point is you wouldn't want to have to update your thermal refugia weekly, monthly, or that often, right? That would be an undue burden to staff to have to do that. So I guess what I'm looking for, is there some annual process or some type of process to update that thing? It sounds like not.
Oh, catch them all and then do it once at the end of the year or
yeah,
something
because
like
again,
that.
Otherwise it's going to be, it seems
idea.
Like it would be just whenever.
Right. I mean, that's how it's written now, that
okay.
it would be whenever. But... that's a good suggestion.
Okay.
I'm not sure if Kat has any more ideas on that.
Did you want to add to that? No.
No? Okay.
Thanks, Ben.
Thanks, Ben.
Mm-hmm. Brian McFadden, Regional Board staff. And I just want to respond to some of the comments made in regards to forestry and clarify some of one of our response to comments. In regard to Mr. Renierson's comment and request that the definition of excess sediment be changed to include anthropogenic sediment sources, we don't feel that change is needed. The first time excess sediment is mentioned, anthropogenic is included in the definition, and we think it's clear that that's what we're talking about. So we don't recommend making a change in that regard. In regards to Mr. Chapman's request for change of language in Chapter 1 in regards to Butte and Antelope Creek, and, the hydrologic area there, again, we don't think the change is required. We think that it's abundantly clear in Chapter 6 what does and does not apply to the Butte Subbasin. Chapter 6 describes the action plan. Chapter 1 is a watershed overview, or you know, it gives an introduction. Chapter 6 is what describes what the action plan contains and what the intent is. So we don't think that we need to make a change in regards to that. But I do want to clarify that Class 3 water courses are not addressed in the action plan. Some of his comments indicated that it wasn't clear that Class 3s weren't. And then finally, in response to Mr. Kornbach's request for language, that justification, that language describing staffs need to justify additional protections be inserted into the action plan. Again, we don't think this change is necessary. We do think that shade is necessary in most cases to protect beneficial use and ensure water quality objective for temperature. And I want to reiterate that the need to protect that shade so that we have the water quality objective met, and that project proponents who are suggesting, it's our recommendation, the project proponents that are suggesting that a project would reduce shade need to justify that or need to describe how that proposed reduction is consistent with the water quality objective for temperature, because we do consider site-specific factors and make allowances in that regard. We don't think that the change that he suggested requiring staff to provide all that justification is necessary. And I want to clarify, and related to that, I want to clarify our response to Mr. Kornbach's comment that he brought up where we said that we would provide reasoning when we thought that there was a change needed. The clarification is that we don't make arbitrary decisions, and we think we're reasonable about those requirements. And that we're really only going to be making decisions that are supported by the preponderance of evidence. And so just want to clarify that and reiterate that we don't think that change is necessary.
And that, Mr. Chair, is it from the staff, from what we heard today. So...
Thank you. Do we have any additional board member questions for staff? We'd like to have questions and comments on both items 1 and 2, just with a reminder that we are going to be voting on these separately. Now's our opportunity. I had some of these, actually 3 of mine were answered just now. So,
Mr. Chick, can I ask a question about dissolved oxygen, the DO amendment, and Alita? My understanding, and I think I have this right, that there were comments related to the DO objective in that, and it, as it pertained to the TMDL model and the use of barometric pressure, because that is part of that equation, that there was some choppiness to that calculation as that model was used. Is it, in fact, has that been smooth? Is that still the case? Where we have, because of, and it's, I think it's a measurement issue of where measurements are taken. Can you clarify that?
Sure. The model has actually gone through 2 different refinements in looking to address this question. The first happened in the fall when we reran the model and made refinements based primarily on the public comments that we got, including a very lengthy review we got from USGS. And the issue is that there are 3 weather stations in the watershed that provide barometric pressure data that is used to populate the model. And in the original run of the model, just those 3 pressure points were used, so that there were some long stretches of river that never, the barometric pressure didn't change, despite the fact that elevation changed and actual barometric pressure would have been different at each of those locations. So in the first refinement, what we did was to identify 5 or 6 key locations, particularly in the longest stretch of river that where there was only 1 barometric pressure data set available, and adjusted the barometric pressure by hand as it was used in the model to account for the change in elevation at those different locations. And that provided a better representation of dissolved oxygen, but it still showed a step down. And there was a particular issue right above the Hoopa Reservation that where the data really didn't look realistic. And so it looked to us like we needed to do a further refinement. And what the what Tetra Tech was able to do then was, in February, rerun the model for that portion that is above HOOPA, so from downstream of Iron Gate Dam, and they included it all the way down to Terwar. They actually adjust the barometric pressure for every node in the model. So they reran the model for that length. They adjusted the model to automatically be able to adjust for elevation. And so now we have a very smooth representation of dissolved oxygen for that reach.
Okay, and with respect to HOOPA, this DO objective runs up against a DO objective that is outside of us, so it runs up against HOOPA. I assume this is consistent then, that this it goes through that process and we don't have an abrupt change in DO objective because HOOPA has something different or we have something different than HOOPA.
Exactly. Okay. That's right. And as part of that, one thing I didn't say as part of the presentation and maybe is helpful to hear is that the HOOPA objective is applies when the life cycle objectives cannot be met due to natural conditions. And EPA approved their objectives as part of when they reviewed their water quality control plan, but asked for some information or clarification on what tool they would use to demonstrate or to calculate natural conditions. And so it's staff's recommendation that this Klamath TMDL model then is that tool that we are using as the basis for developing our water quality objectives, and the HOOPA can also use to justify their 90% saturation criteria.
Yeah, and I find it interesting that the DO objective actually melds very well with the TMDL model and vice versa. It's a mirror unto itself, and that it makes great sense to do these together because of that, and I think that's well done.
Good.
Yeah, thank you.
Any other questions on DO? Okay,
thanks.
Other questions from board members?
I'd like to, at this point, entertain a motion on item one, the DO site-specific objective.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Massey.
I would give you a motion to accept resolution number R-2010-0025.
A second.
And we need to have that with the accompanying errata sheet?
With the accompanying errata sheet, yes.
Three.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Moving on to the second. I'd also like to hear a motion on item two, action plan for the Klamath River TMDLs and the Lower Lost River Implementation Plan.
I'll move a resolution that we consider adoption of resolution number R-1-2010-006 with the errata sheet.
Second.
Mr. Noren. Mr. Chair, can I introduce a motion or a change amendment to that motion, in that I know it's late in the game, but nonetheless, the ag waivers to this process are very important in my mind, and in fact I think they're one of the probably biggest legs of the stool that this thing's going to stand on in the long run. I would like to add a slight amendment to the existing motion, and I would like to ask for staff to come back to us in June with a work plan for the implementation of the ag waiver and how that process is going to work, and then how we are going to go forward and meet December 2012. So with that amendment.
I accept the motion.
Second
amendment.
Okay, all those in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? Motion passes. I see council looking at me.
Just want to clarify whether that was a vote on the motion for the June report back to the board, or whether that was a motion on the full resolution item.
Should have been a motion on the full with the June on the board accepted into the full.
Very good. Thank you.
Okay. All right. Thank you. I would like to thank a whole lot of people in here. I would like to thank everybody who's come to participate in this from the very beginning, everybody that's come to give testimony, everybody that's worked with staff, my fellow board members. And this predates me by a long shot. I have spent my academic and professional career working on rivers. I do this on a day-to-day basis, and this is to craft a TMDL for a 12,000 square mile watershed is a big thing. I'd like to, this kind of sets the bar for more to come, and I just want to say thanks to everybody for doing that. We've thrown the best available science at this, and I think everybody's done a really good job.
Can I make a comment?
You may.
As I left my home this morning on the South Fork of the Trinity, I drove down the South Fork and then came to the Held Inn where the rivers meet of the South Fork of the Trinity and the Main Stem. And I drove up to Hawkins Bar and dropped my daughter off, who had continued to travel up the Trinity to go to school at Burt Ranch. Then I left from there, and I traveled down the Trinity all the way to the Hoopa Indian Reservation, where I left my son to be babysat by my niece for the day. And then I drove back up the river and watched every day, as I do always, as the colors of the rivers change with the season and the activity. And I think of things that the people who've come before me taught me, that when the frogs begin to croak, that means that the sturgeon are running. And when the dogwoods bloom, that means it's time to go eeling. And then when the crickets chirp, it means the salmon are running. And I watch every year as these things happen. So I come from a bit of a mountain background and an agricultural background, and my heart is deep with working with landowners all over the place, well, mostly in the northern part, and watching them change their perspectives of how they manage cattle and the ways to move cattle up out of rivers into the uplands to water, and how to use salt and other supplements to get rid of the barflies, as we call them. So that's a lot of my time, my work with landowners to do that. I just spent the last week running all around the Hoopa Indian Reservation, getting ready to implement one of the first AWEP programs ever funded between our government and an Indian tribe to install an enormous irrigation project. And I am forever blessed with the opportunity to be on the landscape. So with that being said, I just want to make sure that the folks out there know that we think about these things, sometimes late at night when we can't sleep, sometimes in the morning when we first wake up, and we're all at awe when we get the mail right before one of these meetings and they say, here's some light reading. But I want to thank the staff for comments from both sides of the fence, if you will. You guys got kudos from most people today. Nobody was completely satisfied, but I don't know that that's possible. And so this is an enormous project, and it will continue to be an enormous project, because the one thing about decisions that are made is that you never know that they're completely right until the outcome is in front of you. So there may be some mistakes that were made, there may be some good decisions that were made, but in the long run, we're all here, and we know one thing's for sure, and that is that things change. And as things change, I hope that we're all able to learn from the good and accept some of the bad and realize that maybe we don't need to do it like that in the future. But good job, staff. Thank you for everything you guys have done. And kudos to the people who have a passion about what they believe in and are willing to sit here all day long to make sure that their voices are heard, because I think that's what America is about. So thank you for the day, and we will see you tomorrow if you're ever so brave.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Norris.
We're all doing our Academy Award speech. I want to first thank staff. I want to thank Kat, Samantha, everybody's good advice, everybody's hard work. I know you work tirelessly on this thing. It predates me by way further than Jeff. I want to thank EPA, Region 9 and 10, ODEQ, Tetra Tech. I want to thank the public, the tribes, and everybody in between for participating, because I think that the process here, it's a starting. Somebody mentioned to me and reminded me that this is the end of the consent decree. So maybe we just did that. We just passed that. And it's behind you and me and that's an important milestone. It's also a new beginning to try and make this better, and I would ask that we all work together to try to make this implementation and the outcomes that we, I think, all collectively want here to be successful. And I want to just thank everybody for this process. So with that, job well done.
Mr. Massey.
Mr. Ailes. I have the privilege of being the senior member of this board, and when I saw how long we have been working on this, I guess I realized it, but when you have to sit there and actually look at it year by year by year, we have done this and done this and done this. It is a credit to the staff for their tenacity. It is absolutely outstanding to see everybody working together for a common goal. I don't think there's a person in this room, indeed in the public, that wants to see bad things happen to any of our water bodies, and particularly the Klamath. I have fished the Klamath as a kid, and that was back in the last century. The reality of watching all of it come together is just absolutely amazing to me for the years that have gone into this, and I can only say that having now seen this and seeing the tremendous team that was put together by Ms. Coleman and Mr. Leland and all the others, it's just made me greedy, because now we've got a TMDL team. Let's go south. We got a lot of rivers to work on, kids. But thank you all very, very, very much.
Mr. Donker.
Yes. I feel compelled.
Ms. Dean, you're next.
Get ready, Carol. Yet I haven't hardly said a darn word all day. And if you were, I am a council member in Rio Del, and if you were to be a regular attendee at those, you'd know that I'm quite talkative through all the process. And my background comes from salmon restoration, in doing salmon restoration in the Elk River drainage and some other drainages that surround. And having done that for a career and working with many agencies and many people, you know, I was very gratified when I retired from that in helping to make improvements where the rubber hits the road in improving habitat. And when I retired, you can call it irony or you can call it whatever you want, but I ended up on this regional board, and then having to participate since the year 2006 on this project and seeing the progress made, to seeing the passion of many different entities and people, and to see the team that has been working on this for such a long time, and their passion to try to make things right and to try to satisfy everybody. And I tell you, I've seen enough of that on you know, local government politics that it's a hard thing to do even on a small scale like that. But this is a big, big deal. And I do also want to thank for all the participants, for all of you that have come to all the meetings and traveled the many miles and spent the many hours and the time that you spend during your jobs and during your off time in caring about these items that we've been working on. It's a great feat, and we can really be proud, and you can really be proud of the accomplishments that have been made here. And I think we've laid a good foundation into continuing on with this progress and this work. And you know, I kind of agree with Bill. You know, now that we've kind of got our feet warm and we're on a roll, you know, we should take this on the road. But We've certainly got enough to fix right here. So it's a wonderful team. It's been great working with Kat and all the staff. And I've not really worked with really a much better total group than to see this group come together and work at the way that they have in trying to make things right and do things the right way and not rush into things. And I just congratulate you all and thank the staff for all your time and your hard work and your progress on this.
Thanks, Mike.
No pressure, Carol.
Can you add anything?
Well, I'll add my thanks. I don't think I can say anything more about staff or the public process. But I've had the privilege the last couple of few months of being able to travel. And I've met many people concerned about water issues throughout the country. And Canada is certainly very interested in what this region is doing. They are watching this particular TMDL process very carefully because, of course, some of their watersheds are very large as well. But they've also monitored some of our previous work along the Trinity and the Scott, the Garcia, and where we see perhaps maybe not enough improvement in the time that our TMDLs have been in effect, and we would like to see the process happen quicker. They are in awe of what we have done and how we have brought people together. And so we are a model, and we are in the forefront. We've probably made some mistakes along the way, and we will probably make a few mistakes in the future. But the progress that we've made so far certainly overshadows any of the small mistakes that we might have made along the way, and we will correct those mistakes. And it's because of the process that we saw here today, the culmination of the process. So I would just like to add my thanks and let you know that many other people think that we are also doing a terrific job here in Northern California.
Thanks again, everybody. I'd like to just hope that at our next TMDL adoption, we capture the same spirit. So, with that, meeting's adjourned.